right now we have a fully centralized system, and on the other side we have a fully decentralized dream, I would say it. And now we have something in the middle. We have now a system which is way more decentralized than the traditional system, with all the benefits of decentralization. But still, we have centralized components, and we still have intermediaries left. We will see less intermediaries as we have in the traditional capital markets infrastructure, but we will still see intermediaries like CashLink as a fully regulated entity.
Welcome to Inside Digital Assets, the podcast about the future of capital markets, tokenization, digital assets, and the technologies that power them.
Welcome to a new episode of Inside Digital Asset, and we have a very interesting guest today. Welcome, Michael Duttlinger from CashLink.
Yeah, welcome. I'm glad to be here and be part of this series.
Michael, you are CEO and founder of CashLink, a company that actually already exists over 10 years. Can you give us a bit of a short introduction, what you're actually doing and what your story has been so far over the last 10 years?
Yeah. I'm Michael Duttlinger, CEO and co-founder of CashLink. With CashLink, we've built the biggest the largest infrastructure for the issuance of token-based securities, fully regulated in Europe. And we are mainly serving financial institutions so that they can issue token-based securities natively on-chain in a fully regulated way. We are regulated so far in Germany, so we are the first one to obtain the so-called crypto securities registrar license, and we also have a crypto custody license. And our clients range from KfW, the biggest or one of the biggest issuers in Germany, to Deutsche Bank, DZ Bank, and many others. And we have had a great journey because now we are really focusing on financial institutions that they can switch from the traditional capital market infrastructure to a new token-based, more efficient capital markets infrastructure. But as you just said, the company is 10 years old, so it has been a very interesting journey to the point where we are now. And we kicked off actually 2016 as a payment company, so not in the blockchain space at all. We were building a payments infrastructure to easily send links via WhatsApp. And after 2 years, when we saw that, especially back then, it was the ICO hype, it came up and people were really interesting in, I would say, in an easy transfer and investment of any product. And then also later adding all the DeFi components, we saw, okay, how can we use this technology to make traditional assets, securities, real world assets, the same way efficient, easily investable, easily tradable as these ICOs. And then we completely pivoted to tokenization infrastructure back then. We were the first one to issue a security token in Germany. We worked very closely with the German regulator and then later also with the German government, as we've been part of the official advisory board of the German government. We were basically at the beginning, the focus was primarily on alternative assets. So we did an infrastructure and our clients tokenized real estates, solar parks, wind farms, real estate, collectibles like old timers and art paintings. It was mainly in the form of crowd investing. So on the one side, it was retailers buying these alternative assets. And this is basically still working out pretty well. It's a good but niche use case for tokenization with great benefits because it's easier investable and easier transferable and, of course, more efficient. But then we realized, especially in Germany, there came the new electronic securities law, which is still, from my perspective, one of the most advanced blockchain laws worldwide. And Germany has been the country which was the first biggest country in the world that introduced these blockchain laws at scale. And this is something Germans can be very proud of, or the German government, which is sometimes Germans don't make it so easy for themselves to be proud of something. But this is something I think we can be very proud of, because these blockchain laws were really the door opener for all the financial institutions to say, oh, we moved out of a gray zone. We moved from a gray zone in a completely white regulatory zone. And now we don't have to go to the monopoly central securities depository, CSDs. We can also have another way of issuing our securities in a fully electronic or decentralized way on the blockchain, which saves them a lot of costs in the short term and makes them ready for the future in the mid and long term. And that's why we saw then clients like KfW issuing 9-digit bonds. Just two weeks ago, we announced our DZ Bank issuance where we put a lot of other components on chain. We saw a couple of other banks doing POCs now. And now I think we're really in a transition phase that all these institutions who have done POCs and who have really experimented with are now moving to a scalable infrastructure that really will see more and more issuance transforming from the traditional capital market infrastructure to an electronic decentralized capital market infrastructure. And that's why I think it's really interesting to be now at this inflection point as the market leading infrastructure. And a lot has happened in the 10 years and a lot more will happen in the next 10 years.
And thank you very much. I think a lot of interesting points we really need to touch upon a bit more deeper. So the projects you're mentioning and where the journey is going in the future. But let me first also for the listeners deep dive a bit into this German law topic. Because this registrar functionality or in full this crypto securities registrar functionality is something that is very special in Germany. When that has first been announced, my initial reaction was, oh my God, now you have a blockchain that actually could do something. But what are you doing? You implement a new institution that actually is, again, an intermediary for what the blockchain could very well do. Now, I have revised my opinion on that a bit over the last years, because what we see in Germany, also compared to other jurisdictions, actually, that you have all those different providers providing a service that doesn't exist in other jurisdictions. But then we can deep dive a bit into that. Can you give us a bit of an overview what this registrar is? What is his function? What is he doing? And how does he collaborate or interact with the blockchain?
Yeah. So I think at the beginning of tokenization, like you said, the whole, like, what's a crypto ecosystem had the dream of a fully decentralized capital market infrastructure. Basically, this was also the direction after 2008 with coming up Bitcoin, where nobody has any control over your asset, basically. I think when the German government thought about how can we implement this new law, I think it's a very well-designed law and good-designed law. Because if you look at the specifics, right now we have a fully centralized system. And on the other side, we have a fully decentralized dream, I would say it. And now we have something in the middle. So we have a system which is way more decentralized than the traditional system with all the benefits of decentralization. But still we have centralized components and we still have intermediaries left. We will see less intermediaries as we have in the traditional capital markets infrastructure, but we will still see intermediaries like Cashlink as a fully regulated entity. And this is specifically important as being the registrar, because at some point, when we look at Bitcoin, no one has control over Bitcoin. So no one can take away your Bitcoins. And for a capital market infrastructure, that's something as a society which you don't want to have, because you want to imply sanctions. You want to have control over the assets. You want to seize assets. You want to have KYC and AML restrictions, obviously. And that's for a real capital markets infrastructure. You want to have some intermediary, which is fully regulated, which can have control over the assets. And in this case, in the traditional world, it's the CSDs and the custodian banks. And in the new world, it's the registrar at the lowest level. So the registrar is responsible for doing the smart contracts. And the entity who is doing the smart contracts is basically controlling the assets. And we saw this also in the crypto world, where, for example, I think Tether freezed assets, where then people in the crypto ecosystem realized, oh, this, that we still have an intermediary who can control my Tether, And here it's the same. So we have the intermediary who can control the assets because we at Cashlink are controlling the smart contract. And this is also really important because, like I said, if you want to imply sanctions, for example, you need to have access over the registry. If there are errors on the registry, you need to be able to reward functions or transfers and so on. So you want to have someone who has the control. And then if you think at the next step, okay, if there is someone who has the control over the registry that took the smart contract, this entity should be highly regulated. Because if this entity is not regulated, there's someone who has control over the assets who is not regulated, then the market will not trust this infrastructure. And I think this is the biggest difference to all the more unregulated security tokens. These are tech companies who nobody knows which compliance they're enforcing, in which way they are compliant, but they're controlling the life cycle of securities in an unregulated way. This is nothing what you want as a big financial institution and as the whole capital market. And now as being the registrar, Germany says, okay, the one who is doing the registry, has to be regulated under the German regulator BaFin, who has to fulfill many requirements. And then as the market, they can trust, okay, that we have this entity who is regulated, controlled by BaFin, that we can trust them with the issuance of our securities. So that's why I think it's a well-designed law. It makes total sense. If you look at how traditional capital markets work, it's basically adapting the mechanisms of the traditional capital markets while still using the benefits of decentralization. I think if you look at now other countries who have adapted this function, the only thing they did differently is that it's maybe not a new license, as in Germany, it's a new license. In some countries, it's an add-on license to existing licenses, but basically it covers the same mechanism that you want to have a compliant implementation of token-based securities.
And I think what is very important on that is also when you, for example, take the comparison also to Switzerland, where you don't have such a regulated function, you are then also usually missing someone who's actually doing that. So In effect, how it then works, the issuer is responsible for all the things you have been saying, because obviously sanctions, for example, still need to be implemented. AML, KYC, so all the compliance topics around knowing your customer, they still need to be implemented. So they will then always be implemented by the issuer. So you don't have some sort of a coordinated intermediary that actually does it for all the issuers, or let's say for a majority of the issuers. So that makes it more difficult in other jurisdictions where you don't have this function. So I think it's very interesting to also look from a European perspective on that topic. Now, what is a bit, I would say, I mean, it's good to have that in Germany, but what the pity is that you don't have it in all the countries, that you don't have it European-wide, right? So how are you handling that? I mean, Europe's first market is Germany, but I believe you're also looking outside Germany. So how are the steps of actually bringing what you're doing in Germany also to markets outside Germany?
Yeah. So I think what is still a not favorable situation in Europe is that on the issuance side, it's still not harmonized on EU level. And we see this with the traditional CSDs. We have a CSD in every basically one CSD in every European country, basically, and it's not harmonized. So distribution is harmonized. If you have a prospectus, you can, of course, distribute it via Europe, but it's still at one registrar. There's not one European registrar. So we still have this unharmonized regimes in Europe, and it's still holding true again in a token-based capital market infrastructure. So the way I look at it, we have basically three layers. And the lowest layer is the issuance registry layer. Then we have the settlement system layer. And then we have the trading layer. And obviously, Centurion, for example, is especially now active in the settlement system and a trading layer, where we have a harmonized DLT pilot regime, which is very good on the EU level that we have harmonized two of the three layers. The lowest layer, the issuance layer, is still a national one. What is important is that the registry layer, it's in Germany or Luxembourg or in any other European country, is compatible with the DLT pilot regime layer. And it can, the issuance can be distributed European wide. And if we look at a traditional market system, it's basically the same. So if you look at a big European bank, the big European bank is not issuing in every 27 countries. They have maybe three, maybe four major issuance countries. Usually for funds, it's a lot of Luxembourg. So retail structured products are a lot in Germany. Bonds are also Germany, maybe France, Italy, and so on. But you have some major issuance countries. And then they issue in these countries and then they distribute it European-wide. And it's the same here. As an issuer, you choose your country where you issue. And the factors why you choose your issuance country, it's about many factors. It's tax, the way the regulator handles prospectus and so on, many other reasons. Or compartment structure in Luxembourg, for example. And then you have to just comply to the national blockchain laws. In Germany, it's the registrar. In Luxembourg, it's the Blockchain Act and so on. And then you issue according to national law. You work with a DLT pilot regime like Satorion, and you distribute it with European prospectus European-wide. So that's why basically there's no change to the current system. What I don't believe is, and what people in the industry, I think, are getting wrong is that the issuers will change the issuance hub due to blockchain laws. And I think this will not happen. So we have this. One of our clients told me this 2 weeks ago, that they get approached a lot by so many tokenization providers and say, oh, we can do it to Spanish law now or to some small countries law, the Liechtenstein law and so on. And they're like, yeah, but our main hub is Luxembourg for our funds. We will not switch to one of these countries only because of the blockchain laws. So we will stay in Luxembourg or in the respective jurisdictions we're now in. And for us, it's only, okay, we have to work with someone who has the registrar license in this respective European country. So that's why it's basically the same as in the traditional world. There will be no changes due to blockchain laws. And then for Cashlink now specifically, we can do this for Germany. We're also planning to expand to other European countries, that we can also have the registrar license in the other respective issuance countries. And then they can be distributed and settled European-wide.
What will be the most important countries for yourself and you believe in the European market for issuance? Besides Germany, Luxembourg?
Yeah. So if you look at the numbers of where the issuances are taking place right now, Germany obviously is one of the biggest issuance hub in Europe. Luxembourg is the biggest hub, especially for funds. Ireland is also very strong. If you look at how far they have advanced with blockchain laws, Germany is far advanced. Luxembourg is also far advanced. Ireland is more behind, I would say. That's why I would so naturally, I think we will see, and it's also interesting for us, it's moving into Luxembourg law. And then the next other countries where we also see more issuances, probably France, where you also see more issuances. But then I think we have a huge long tail in European countries. So you have a couple of countries where account for more than 50% of all the issuances and issuance volumes, depending on which metric you're looking at, number of issuance or issuance volume. And then you have a lot of the other European countries are more long tail, where you only have which contribute only in a very small way to the big number of the issuance market.
Okay, great. Now that makes a lot of sense. Thanks for elaborating on that. Now, when we deep dive a bit on the transactions that you did, and you were mentioning a couple of them were pilot transactions, but a couple of them also real transactions and also in high digit numbers. So can you touch a bit the most important transactions that you did over the last few years?
Yeah, no, happy to do so. I think what we see is how financial institutions approach this space. It's basically always the same process, which we also offer at a kind of standardized service. And they usually start with education. And then they do it by themselves. They talk to us. They talk to you, like Satorion, or they hire blockchain consultancy companies. So they start with the education part. After that, they realize the next step, this should be some POC. So Bankhaus Metzler, I like to quote them a lot. because they said on stage one time, you don't learn swimming by reading books. And that's why they then usually decide, okay, we have to do an issuance, because only if you do a real issuance, we can really have the internal learning effects. What does it mean for compliance? What does it mean for the outsourcing? What does it mean for NPP processes and so on? And you really get not only the innovation unit on board, you get all the other units on board, which have nothing to do with innovation, which are pure compliance, for example, but which is very important also regarding change management to get on board. What we also realized with the issuances is that we had to realize this in one of the projects, don't do too much at once, because it's an intense change management process, because you're switching from a CSD-based, traditional-based issuance to a blockchain-based issuance. And then if you already add many other changes on top, which you can do with token-based securities, it's just too much for the organization. So that's why the first POC is usually just a plain vanilla issuance. So nothing special. So we just do everything we do right now. We just change one thing. We don't retro it with the CSD. We register the issuance with CashLink on a blockchain. And then, for example, it was the Bankhaus Metzler. We did the first fund in Germany together with Union Investment. Then we did with KfW, we did a 100 million bond, which had a duration, I think, of 1 or 2 years, which then got bought by DZ Bank and Deutsche Bank and also Union Investment. So by other, I would say, friends and family financial institutions. So what we're also seeing is that the institutions in the POCs are also within the POCs moving from small issuances and very short durations to higher volume issuances and longer durations. So I would say this is also the next evolution of the POC stage. Mm-hmm. We did with NRW Bank a 9-digit issuance. We will do another 9-digit issuance in the next couple of months. And this will be the biggest one we're doing so far. So there we will also see again increase in volume and volume. What also then, after we did these POCs happened, the next experimentation phase was done the ECB trials. So in the first stage, it was usually free of payment and fiat payment, So we don't have it real delivery versus payment process. And then there came the ECB trials where then CashLink participated, and then we could do a target 2 transaction in this experimentation phase of the European Central Bank and Bundesbank, which we also did with KfW and VE Bank from Helabar also, where then we could use the target 2 system to do delivery versus payment with European Central Bank, kind of a wholesale CBDC solution. I think this was also very valuable for all the participants to gain a lot of insights and experiences. And now, especially like last issuance we did with DZ Bank was even the next step further, where we saw, okay, can we put more on chain? Can we put more of the life cycle, like the creation of the ISIN on chain and more data on chain and more oracles on chain? So this was the last evolution, I would say, of the POCs. And besides all these POCs and evolutions, we have, I would say, a parallel track where other institutions are already implementing a fully scalable solution. And the fully scalable solution, I think we will firstly see with structured products, especially retail structured products, so leverage products, because here we have a very, I would say, siloed value chain. Because usually what's also a criticism about this new capital market infrastructure is that it's not all interconnected, or interoperability is missing. And I think that's true, these arguments. But what's now happening is that we see siloed ecosystems going fully on-chain and using token-based securities. And one of them will be structured products, because you will have a neo-broker distributing this structured products. You will have an issuer issuing them. You will have a registrar like CashLink doing the registry of the security. You will have a settlement system like Centurion in between. And then you have the full value chain on chain, which works perfectly And you don't need this big interoperability with the rest of the market. And we will see this very soon in production with real retailers buying these products. And this is actually what I'm most looking forward to when this goes live.
I also believe now we are in a phase where we are really entering scaling mode. So it's not a piloting phase anymore. It's really going into scaling mode. But I think you described it very well, how this transition actually happened. Is there anything else, when you look into the future a bit, what makes you most, let's say, excited for the industry? And like, how do you look into the future?
Yeah. So I think what's really exciting for me is that we will have now these inflection points. And if I look at our pipeline and our and the projects we are facing now, there will be the scale will increase intensively, and this will have ripple effects on the others, because the first ones who are implementing will have competitive advantages to their customers, because the neo brokers can offer products they could not offer before. Neo brokers will offer cheaper products, which then makes customer acquisition easier. So that's why we will see then other neo brokers seeing this and also wanting to grab this competitive advantage and not being outcompeted by their competitors. So I think this ripple effects I'm really looking forward to. These scalable use cases I'm looking forward to. I also see, if you look at the United States, the momentum in the US, which is also due to the regulation there, is now emerging, is immense. And this will also swap to Europe. This will also increase the competition in Europe, because the United States, they will move forward to tokenizing Wall Street with a lot of power, a lot of will, a lot of money. And this will have a positive effect on Europe, and it will just accelerate things also in Europe. Obviously, we need to still talk about regulation. There's still a lot to do on the regulation side, and we cannot stop the regulation here. We have to advance the regulation. Nevertheless, I'm very positive and confident that the next 1 to 5 years will be a real transition, scalable period for all of us.
And if you look, maybe as a last question, if you look like really far ahead, maybe like 5-10 years ahead, do you believe you are going to live in a system where we fully moved into an infrastructure that is going outside the CSDs? Or do you still see certain like hybrid models or certain asset classes that still fully stay in the old world?
So obviously, if I could wish, well, I would have the future. I would have, I would love to have a full transition from away from the CSDs. But being more realistic, I think for a very long time, we will see hybrid models. Also, the CSDs will have their tokenization initiatives and projects, and will maybe move even internally to tokenized ways, still being a CSD, trying to protect its own business model, but always like still, but on the other side, always now using and also now using this new technology. We will see a very long time period, even 5 to 10 years or even more, we will see hybrid models. I think we will see more financial institutions internalizing the CSD function, especially if your own target group, your own clients, you're the issuer by yourself, you're doing the market making by yourselves. Why would you not internalize the part of the value chain of the CSD? So I think we will see this more, but we still will have the CSD model for a very long time in parallel.
And it's also where we at Saturn are likely heading to, right? Having more of a settlement infrastructure that orchestrates between different wallets at the bank, so that very much goes hand in hand. I really liked the conversation we had today, Michael. So a great pleasure to have you had in this podcast. I'm very much looking forward to what's ahead of us in the industry. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot also for inviting me.
This was Inside Digital Assets, a joint project by BX Digital and Saturion. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast and feel free to share with others.